open the Subcommittee on General Government and Transportation and Economic Development. This morning it's Wednesday, June 15th, 2005. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2238 relating to consolidated applications. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is a bill that requires the Liquor Control Commission to offer applicants who seek both a liquor sales license, a new one or a renewal, and a lottery game retailer contract, the option of a consolidated application. It requires approval of the application form by the Oregon State Lottery Commission and specifies that the application only be accepted if the applicant pays the designated fees for each authority. This is an efficiency measure to allow so that both agencies can take advantage of the resources of the investigation work that goes on at OLCC.
Perfect.
And I will get the signing sheet.
Terrific. We have the distinct pleasure of having Representative Crummell with us today, and I don't know if you'd be willing to come up, Chair Crummell, and just take a few minutes and share with us House Bill 2238 and the good work that is to be accomplished with this. Now, before you sit, or as you're sitting down, I have to share with the audience and share with the committee. We have four ladies with us who are, some of them are from my district. Others are new friends that I met yesterday, and I don't know if they'd take a moment and introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Shaylee Fox, and I'm from Umatilla County.
I'm Elizabeth Sober, and I'm also from Umatilla County.
I'm Nicole Foreman, and I'm from Josephine County.
I'm Tasha Levin, and I'm from Bay.
Welcome, ladies. And for those in the audience, I promised these ladies that if they had any questions relating to any of these bills, that I would have let them ask. So expect some tough questions. You're over at Willamette University as part of Girl State. And so welcome, and welcome to the Capitol. And we're so glad you could be up here with us today.
Thank you.
Why don't we begin, Chair Crummell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Gary Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. I must say, Mr. Chair, that I can handle questions from just about anybody, including Representatives Krupp and Avakian and staff and yourself. I don't know if I can handle the questions from...
They're tough. They're really tough.
...from Curl State, and that's what I'm concerned about, are the questions being overly tough. I will be very brief, Mr. Chair. This bill came. I had a constituent who had an issue with OLCC and lottery, and one of the things that we discovered was that their processes don't really necessarily match up. I worked with Mr. Stubenval from OLCC, and the Committee on Government Operations and Oversight from the interim actually introduced this as a pre-session filed bill. The policy question here is to combine the application processes so that when a person fills out an application for OLCC, they can that same information can be transferred over to the lottery. Part of this is also with regards to the OLCC's technology package, which you passed out of this committee and out of full budget a couple of weeks ago. This is a companion piece to that, and there are some savings that can be realized by both OLCC and lottery by putting this policy into place. I would just ask for your support and to move the bill on through the process so that we can put this in, and OLCC and lottery can work closer together in sharing the same information.
Terrific. Thank you. Any questions? Seeing no questions, I'm going to close the public hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2238. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2238, and I'd like to share my thoughts on this. I think House Bill 2238 represents good government, and it's the type of legislation that the citizenry expects from the state of Oregon, and I want to commend Chair Crummell on bringing forward this good piece of public policy. So with that, we looking for other discussion or...
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to call your attention to the fiscal impact statement that is at your place on this bill. There is a $69,872 fiscal to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and the lottery. Oregon Liquor Control Commission is what this is for.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we pass House Bill 2238 on to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Avakian moves House Bill 2238 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any abstentions? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Avakian, would you carry this on in the committee? And then Representative Perlman, would you carry this on the House floor for us?
I would be happy.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So, have a great day. We're going to close work session on House Bill 2238. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2056 relating to licenses issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have your staff measure summary in front of you for this bill. The bill establishes a one-time non-refundable initial application fee of $400 for OLCC licenses. In addition to their current licensing fee, it allows a waiver of the new fee by the commission, changes the renewal period for licenses from 1 year to 2 years, and doubles licensing fees to cover the longer period of time, and it limits city and county authority to adopt time, place, and manner. This bill was referred to us for the fiscal impact statement, fiscal review, and it is... That is also in front of you, and I would just like to point out to you that currently their Oregon Liquor Control Commission's fee revenue covers about 27% of the cost to actually issue these fees, and the largest portion of issuing the license has to do with the upfront investigation that they do of any businesses that apply for a license. The $400 is estimated by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to cover most of those costs. And putting together this fiscal impact statement, it's also understood that with the increase in fee, the agency would be allowed to add three staff positions to process the licenses within the 45-day period of time that is whatever period of time they can't. The local jurisdiction has 45 days to review the license, and if they get it to the Liquor Control Commission in time, OLCC believes they can get it out within that 45-day period of time with these additional staff. So what I would be recommending is that their budget bill is needs a couple of corrections. It's been passed out of both the House and the Senate, and I would recommend an amendment to that bill to add in this fiscal on the budget bill itself. Okay. So we won't have to amend the bill here.
Okay. Let's go. Thank you. Okay. We're going to go into public testimony. If anyone wants to speak on this, we're hoping that you signed up on there. Why don't we do this? We have the distinct pleasure of having a former representative and senator, and now City of Portland Commissioner. Why don't we ask Mr.
And Mr. Chairman,
and we'll pick up
my fellow talk show host, Sunday mornings on News Radio 750 KXL.
Oh, this is going to get exciting. Commissioner Leonard, come on up. Come on up.
Thank you. My name is Randy Leonard. I'm a commissioner on the Portland City Council. I wonder if I could have one of the staff folks testify first about kind of the background of the bill and the actual workings of it before I testify.
Great. My name is Eric King. I'm the crime prevention manager for the City of Portland. So I just want to give a little bit of background, a little context to why we're not supporting this bill. As the city's crime prevention manager, our mission is to organize and support community partnerships to prevent crime and the fear of crime. So we work directly with neighborhoods, public safety activists, businesses, and other community groups to problem solve livability and public safety issues. For over the past 5 years, we've worked really hard to ensure that all liquor establishments within the city of Portland meet the expectations of the community and operate in a lawful manner that does not unreasonably disturb the peace and tranquility of our neighborhoods. Our focus is on prevention. Part of our prevention strategy is to work directly with the community and businesses to solve problems at the lowest level. So I think it's important to emphasize that that's kind of the place that we're coming from. However, sometimes we need additional tools that can provide leverage for this problem-solving process to occur. The intent of these tools is to preserve our police resources and keep situations from going to the court, going through a costly legal system. In Portland, we have over 2,000 liquor licensed establishments that are part of our vibrant neighborhood commercial districts, as well as part of our downtown nightlife and other entertainment areas as well. According to data provided by OLCC, there has been a significant drop in resources allocated towards enforcement. For example, in 2001, there was 4,809 biannual licensed premise visits, and 2,035 in 2004. And this is over these visits are of the 10,000 licenses within the state, which amounts to about a 50% drop in over those last 3 years on enforcement activities. Additionally, the number of licenses per inspector has gone from 313 in 1990 to now just under 400, which is a 25% increase in workload. So more licenses within the city of Portland, less inspectors to really deal with some of the enforcement issues is the point that I'm trying to make. Given that this context, the city has needed to step in and use tools it has available to address neighborhood livability issues that get reported, because they do get reported to us. We have quite a few complaints that arise from liquor establishments. Therefore, we have developed a liquor license program which provides notification to neighbors and community groups when a new outlet is being proposed. Our role is to then work proactively with the licensee and neighbors to mitigate any potential livability or public safety issues prior to that license going in. In many cases, this takes the form of a good neighbor agreement. So the idea is to really work up front instead of at the back end. However, there are some instances where parties are unwilling to craft an agreement or the business has not been able to mitigate livability impacts to the neighborhood. In these cases, we then try to problem solve. It could be as simple as getting the parties together and getting them to the table and working out a solution. And that's what happens most of the time, really. On average, of the 2,000 licenses in Portland, about 20 or so, we deal with about 20 or so licenses, which is 1%, to really do some of that active problem solving. Specifically, this past year, with having the time, place, and manner ordinance passed by the City of Portland last March, we have been involved in problem-solving 21 different locations, so on at about what our average is per year, about 1% of the population of the licensed establishments. Of those 20 locations, they have generated 150 complaints from neighbors. Of those 21, about 10, half of those, really meet the threshold of our time, place, and manner ordinance, which just as a little background, the ordinance requires that if you have 3 nuisance activity violations in 30 days, you would fall under that ordinance. We would then send notice to the licensee, and it would sort of trigger the problem-solving process. So about 10 have sort of meet that threshold. Of those 10, only really one location have we not been able to work out an agreement, and we've recommended for further enforcement action to take to a code. In the city of Portland, we have a code hearings officer that would has some remedies available, which would include limiting the hours of operation, hiring additional security, whatever it would take to sort of mitigate the problems that are being reported. So, therefore, House Bill 2056 will severely limit the City of Portland's ability to address the livability issues related to arising from a liquor establishment on several fronts, and I'm going to go through these. First, the two-year renewal cycle. The renewal cycle is another opportunity, in addition to the time, place, and manner ordinance, for folks to use that renewal process. We notify neighbors when a license is up for renew to provide some input as to how that liquor license might be it's not operating in a responsible manner. So we can use that renewal process to get folks at the table. Going to a two-year process is going to limit that. Also, we've also heard that OLCC, although they're doubling their fees, the local jurisdiction has the ability to recover fees and has a local fee. And we would, if that does go through, we'd want to make sure that local jurisdictions could still recover their costs and double their fees, just like the OLCC. The temporary license, the issuance of a temporary letter of authority could allow a problem outlet to operate without the due diligence of a background investigation and neighborhood feedback, thereby increasing the risk for problem behavior and nuisance activity violations. And then thirdly, the time, place, and manner, I think the big one here is this bill would limit our authority, again, to regulate the time, place, and manner in which alcohol is sold or served to any nuisance activity occurring within the establishment, therefore excluding problem behavior that might spill out into the neighborhood. And given the context of, you know, less enforcement by the OLCC, you know, there's a clear need for us to, you know, try to step in. And really the intent is to problem solve.
Chair,
yes,
we'll go over that last point again. I'm not seeing exactly where in this bill it limits you. So I think I missed your last point.
Sure. I think that in the bill it said...
Section 5.
Okay. And link
the
section...
The change that's the concern is adding the language, regulations of nuisances occurring on, meaning inside a licensed premises. Whereas currently, the take complaints that include fights and music that spills out in the parking lots and into the street.
And I think the other point, too, is that it's changing from establishments, which the definition of establishment is broader than a licensed premise. Establishment is not just the, you know, what happens inside that location, but, you know, areas outside the parking lot or any other.
In may I?
Please, Representative Abaki.
I think I see where you're headed with this, because the prior language was aspects of establishments. The proposed language is on the licensed premises.
Correct.
But what is it that's limiting the city from regulating what's going on a block down? You have fights that are breaking out a block away because of spillover from some establishment. Are you thinking that this limits your ability to do something with the establishment because of that?
That's the intent of the language.
Okay. I just wanted, a last point that I wanted to point out is that as part of the ordinance, we set up an oversight committee, a time, place, and manner oversight committee that included representatives from the Oregon Restaurant Association, Oregon Grocers Association, Small Business Advisory Council, and neighborhood associations. And so we've been meeting quarterly to review the intent of the ordinance, to see how we're implementing in this ordinance, and we've had no issues or concerns that have been brought up on how the city has implemented this ordinance. I think there was some initial concern when we passed it that we were going to, unduly punish licensees for problem behavior that they have no control of. That is not the intent. The intent is to really, you know, work to substantiate those complaints that we hear and go through a process and get them at the table and solving those problems, again, at the lowest level. And you can clearly see, you know, we're not taking a heavy-handed enforcement action. We're using the tool as leverage to get folks at the table.
Let me take one more shot at that. When you look at Section 5, because I don't think I articulated very well what I was trying to get to. When you look at Section 5 and the change that occurs, if you look to Section 5, subsection 2, the one right underneath it, where it says that the authority granted under this section is in addition to and not in lieu of what you can do under your own city charter. So I guess I'm wondering if you still would have the ability to create your own authority to manage that environment around an establishment, regardless of what is changed in Section 1.
Well, the tool that we use that's at issue here with, frankly, the Oregon Restaurant Association is that with this current language, we are allowed to regulate the hours of a liquor establishment if they conduct in the kind of activities, if they conduct themselves the kind of activities which leads to fights in the street, as you pointed out, or loud music, or as I've witnessed, near riot conditions outside the premises. The Restaurant Association has fought this in court. They have now and lost, and now have come here with this language in order to restrict the ability of the city to regulate activities that occur beyond the premises. So that in instances where, for instance, the riot conditions that happened frequently in a downtown bar that were outside the premises would be specifically precluded from being able to be used to justify regulating the hours of the offending premise.
Under section...
Really quick, Commissioner Leonard, I need you to just identify yourself for the record.
I'm Randy Leonard, Portland City Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Under Representative
Bakke. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under section 5, the subsection 1 there, I think you're right. Under the subsection 2, I'm not so sure you're right.
Well, that would be good news if I wasn't. I can tell you that this was drafted specifically to do what I'm saying.
And I do understand that point very clearly.
So maybe I can segue from Eric's testimony, which I appreciate, to kind of how I, because I drafted this ordinance and worked to pass it with Portlanders and the then composition of the city council, which was about 2 years ago. We all come to public service with a variety of experiences that influence how we do our work. Mine, when I entered the city council in 2002, was greatly influenced by my service here in the legislature, and positively so. Many of the good things that we've done on the council are really models based here in the Ways and Means process, for instance, in our latest budget work, which I'm grateful of. But another one of my experiences in my life that Representative Krupp and I share was I was a firefighter for 25 years before entering the Fire Bureau. There was no single factor that caused more heartache and grief to people than the consumption, overconsumption of alcohol. The accidents that it led to, the fights, the shootings, the stabbings, the heartbreak that occurs. And it's bad enough that it impacts the individuals involved. It becomes intolerable when people who live in neighborhoods that are influenced by, and I want to make this really clear, a misbehaving liquor establishment allows those kinds of activities to occur, not just in the establishment, but often in the parking lot after hours, where people will go and buy beer when the tavern closes, sit in the parking lot, open their doors, turn on their stereos, fights in the street. As I alluded to earlier, I witnessed a video where one of the worst offending establishments, which fortunately is now closed, known as The Fuel in Northwest Portland, had regularly near riot conditions as the bar closed and people spilled out into the street. So working with the neighbors, who you'll hear from here in a moment, we came up with what I believe is a very balanced, common sense approach to deal with those problems. And that is, if we have three documented incidents, and by documented I mean more than just a 911 call from somebody saying, you know, this tavern across the street is causing a problem. But documented would mean not only would there be a call, but a police officer come and verify that that happened, so that we weren't just using unsubstantiated complaints to harass good businesses that perform well. So three documented complaints, and that kicks in then a process that ultimately leads not to closing the establishment or reducing the hours of the establishment at that point, but causing the establishment owner and our good folks at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to sit down with the neighbors and negotiate a good neighbor agreement, and which would say, okay, we've got three substantial complaints. We've got a problem here. We've got people, you do not want, as a business, people going out in the street after hours drinking at 2:30, 3 in the morning, fighting, screaming, playing music. That's not good for your business, and it's certainly not something the neighbors are going to tolerate. So we want to sit down with you and come up with an agreement on how we can address that. And we use these good neighbor agreements very successfully. I mean, they are the epitome of bringing disputing sides together and coming up with a resolution that works. And I will tell you, from 2 years ago to now, we have never actually had to use the language to reduce the hours, because that's the point of the ordinance, is to be able to ultimately say, we've documented complaints, we've tried to work with you, we've had a good neighbor agreement, you've ignored that. Now we are going to have to use the other tool in the ordinance, which says, we have documented that these problems start beginning at 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night, therefore your business must close by that time. and we'll sit down and review it again after some time to make sure that it's addressing the problem. And if we can come together, maybe we can relax that. We've never had to do that, because this creates the incentive for the business owners that didn't used to exist to sit down with us and work out the problem in a good neighbor agreement. Some have said, well, that's the OLCC's job. Well, I unfortunately have been in the position you all are in, and am intimately familiar with the fact that the OLCC has lost the funding for the staffing to be able to do an adequate job. They cannot keep up with the amounts of complaints that they have. And some of the staff at OLCC told us they consider this to be a partnership with us, that they appreciated that we would actually not just be looking to them to come and mediate these neighborhood disputes, but the city actually would have a tool where we could fix the problem, thereby relieving OLCC of having to deal with it. I want you to know this, that I included from day one, and again, that comes from my experience here, representatives of the Oregon Restaurant Association in the formulation of this ordinance. And I didn't just include them so that I can include them. The ordinance is different because they were included. It has protections in it. It has an oversight committee. It has provisions specifically addressing legitimate concerns they came up with. Why they are so opposed to this is beyond me. And I want to relate to you one story that I had with the owner of the Benson Hotel downtown. After receiving a communication from the Oregon Restaurant Association that this tool could be used then by citizens to harass the Benson Hotel, which is probably arguably one of the nicer hotels in Portland. And he had been led to believe that we would come in there with our police, and the first time some angry person complained and shut them down. When I explained to him, I said, well, that's not going to happen. That's absolutely not what's intended to happen. And I gave him the specific examples of these misbehaving establishments, of which there was less than a half dozen in the entire city, and the kinds of activities, and that's what we were targeting. And I said to him, and he ultimately agreed with me, that you do not want one of these establishments across from the Benson Hotel. You do not want to have a bar on the corner of Southwest Broadway and Ash Street where the owners care only about making money, and they keep the doors open till 2:30 in the morning, and then the patrons line up at 2:15 to buy six packs of beer to go out in the street, which they do, and start drinking, and the owner says, not my problem, they're outside, because that impacts the guests at the Benson Hotel. Well, he went from saying, well, not only am I not opposed to it, I actually support it. I didn't think about it like that. So this is a tool for responsible business owners to make sure that their partners and their business are behaving appropriately and properly and managing the consumption of alcohol by individuals who've had enough and not tolerating people who create disturbances for the good citizens of Portland who are, you know, doing nothing more than wanting to get a good night's sleep and get up and go to work, pay taxes. So I would really appreciate it if you would remove this provision from the bill and allow local government to do its job, which is to make sure that we have a safe and secure environment. This isn't just a Portland problem, by the way. This is an issue in any town, any city in Oregon that could adversely impact responsible, hardworking citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Croft.
Thank you. I think it is good neighbor agreements have you negotiated since this ordinance has been in effect?
Probably, we negotiate good neighbor agreements regardless of a time, place, and manner. We do that up. Okay. We try to do that up front, and so on average, I would say about 50 good neighbor agreements per year. And on average, we have about 300 or so new outlets coming into Portland, and a good portion of those we're able to negotiate good neighbor agreements with the licensee.
So,
please follow up,
Mr. Chair. So you try to you're trying to do that up front now with
right.
new businesses that come in seeking.
We've always done.
We've always.
You
done.
Always have.
Always
okay.
have before
okay.
the ordinance. We did that.
Right.
Okay.
It's just good for the business to know the lay of the ground in the neighborhood they're in. They appreciate it. The neighbors appreciate it because they get an opportunity to meet the business owner and then they become partners. And that works for 99.9% of our liquor establishments. And I want to emphasize that they work in partnership with the neighbors they're in. It's just like anything else. It's a few, I mean, literally a handful that that are not interested in being cooperative and working with the neighbors that, that the ordinance had to be drafted for.
So Mr. Chair, there is no other mechanism of dealing with this issue. You made the comment that some say in rebuttal to this ordinance that OLCC is the one responsible for taking care of these issues. Is there any other mechanism by which this can be accomplished through the existing OLCC rules? And how does that work?
Well, the rules, if you look at the statute, the current statute, it's interesting, and this isn't language that's new or being challenged, by the way, and it says, and this is 471.315, paragraph 5, that they talk about a history of serious abusive behavior, which is grounds for refusal under license in this section, includes excessive noise, music or sound vibrations, public drunkenness, fights, altercations, harassment, unlawful drug sales, alcohol or related litter, trespassing on private property. So these are the provisions that OLCC currently uses to relicense. What we're doing basically is augmenting their limited resources by basically using that same language to allow, we can't deny as a local government a liquor license, obviously. The OLCC does that. What we figured out our one little strategy was we could regulate the hours based on the current language of the statute passed in 1989, that we had the ability to regulate time, place, and manner of operation of OLCC. OLCC had the ability to grant the license. So this, Representative Krupp, is the only tool we found where we could go in based on, you know, a foundation found in the statute and regulate an existing bar. This language I just read you is what OLCC would use to deny the license being renewed again. And this allows us during the actual period that the license is good for to go in and, again, with substantiated evidence, sit down and ultimately regulate the hours. As I said, in the last 2 years, that has not been necessary because because the language now is there, it allows Eric and others to sit down with these taverns and say, look, we don't want to go to this other place. We'd rather work this out, and it has worked well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Avakian.
Tell me how you construe nuisance occurring on, in this respect. Let's take the blaring music that can be heard three blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
Is the nuisance the point at which the music is heard or the point at which it's created?
Well, from our perspective, it's the point at which it's heard. And that's actually a very common complaint. I think from the Restaurant Association's perspective, it would be as it impacted the premises with this amendment. They're clearly attempting to regulate the restrict the ability of cities to regulate impact beyond the premises. So if you had a fight on the premises or you had a band in the premises that was playing music, if a complaint came from inside the tavern, I think what they would argue is you could do something about that. If it came from a neighbor across the street, you can't.
Then you can't. Give me a second, okay?
Yeah, of course.
No, I think that was clear enough. So anything that is occurring, first of all, on the premises means in the building, does it include the parking lot too?
No, the license premise, the way that it's defined in state statute is just...
It's not a matter of property ownership, it's a manage of the building.
Exactly. The establishment, the language that is in there,
right,
that we've used is broader than just the...
Unless, I guess, you've got a place, like some of these places that have, like, barbecues set up in the parking lot, or, you know, they sell ribs or something,
yeah,
and so there's some actual operation that's out there. So
right,
then it would extend out, I suppose.
If they served liquor out there.
Okay. The establishment would be the licensed piece, meaning where they serve the liquor,
that's
not
correct,
just where they have operations.
That's correct.
Selling hot dogs or something.
That's correct.
Okay. And that... you would construe this new language to be that somebody within that parameter would need to claim nuisance in order for you to be able to do something.
That's correct. That's the intent.
So if the fight starts in the bar,
mm-hmm.
and then spills out into the parking lot, you lose jurisdiction as soon as they left the front door.
That's the intent of the language. And I want to address where this comes from, and I think the concern is legitimate, but we address it. The concern raised by the Restaurant Association early on as we were crafting this was, how is it fair if, you know, you have an alleged offending establishment on Northwest 23rd and Everett, and then on Northwest 25th and Everett at 3 in the morning, people are out there drinking, breaking beer bottles in the street, which actually happens. How can is it fair to know that they bought that beer at this place you're alleging as the offender? And that's where we came up with the three substantiated complaints. So if a neighbor looks out, sees this happening, calls 911 and says, there are people out in the street that are drinking, and we think they came from this place down on Northwest 23rd, unless the police officer has evidence to that fact, it does not count as one of the substantiated complaints.
Right.
You actually have to be able to tie the activity to an establishment, because the point was made, for an example, right. that somebody could start off drinking at one establishment on 23rd and then bar hop and go to a number of different ones. Well, who's to blame? That's a good point. And I think for those, we just need to use our normal nuisance kinds of disorderly conduct ordinances and statutes to deal with the offenders. But where we can, and there are a handful of cases where we can absolutely tie activities to a bar with evidence, this gives us that tool to be able to.
Please. I mean, many times the pattern of the bad conduct occurs outside the premises. Matter of fact, there's certainly, if you're an owner of a bar, you don't want prostitution and drug deals inside the bar.
You wouldn't think so.
Well, we all know it happens.
Yeah.
But we all know that oftentimes happens right outside the bar.
Yeah.
You go outside to do your business.
That's right.
And
that may not necessarily be tied to the activities of the establishment, that example you gave.
But this is what I'm getting to. But I'm guessing, as a local jurisdiction, you want the ability to make that connection if you have to.
If we
right.
can. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of times what it is, it's an over-serving issue, or it's just they're poorly managing that establishment, so there's, you know, no security, there's no policy in place, to maybe a soft closing policy where folks are kind of shuffling out as the bar closes in a staggered way, versus just opening the doors and then you've got, you know, 200 patrons out spilling out in the streets. And as Commissioner Leonard alluded to, we've got some, you know, some establishments where there's just near riots, you know, kind of, you know, that neighbors have had to deal with for over a year, you know, it's just unreasonable. So, you know, that's really what this is meant for.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. We're going to ask, and if I mispronounce his name, I apologize, Mark Kirchmeier. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, good, good. From the Honorable Representative Gary Hansen's office.
Thank you. I'll be reading Representative Hansen's testimony. All cities, and I mean virtually any Oregon city with more than a few thousand people, has periodic problems, obviously, with a cocktail bar or tavern that needs to be a better neighbor. Residents living near problem bars and taverns face aggravations or worse, including sidewalk fistfights, screeching car tires, traffic property damage, and what might be delicately called the elimination of bodily fluids in very public places. The city of Portland has been innovative in managing those establishments that do create problems. I invite my colleagues to reflect on how residents in many rural and suburban towns who live within earshot of such nocturnal establishments would similarly benefit from such protections. The amendment to HB 2056 would strike down this local control option. The amendment has come out of the blue and deserves to be rejected. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Linda Netkoven? Netkoven?
Netkoven.
Oh, thank you.
Could be my bad handwriting this
morning. No, it's it's the challenge of the chair here. Welcome. If you could just introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. My name is Linda Nedekoven. I live at 2018 Southeast Ladd Avenue in Portland. I'm here this morning to speak in favor of good working relationships between businesses and neighborhoods. That means I'm against the current amended version of House Bill 2056. I am co-chair of the Southeast Uplift Coalition, which brings together the concerns of 20 neighborhood associations and 9 business associations in Southeast Portland. That's approximately a third of the population of the city that falls within our boundaries. In that capacity, I work closely on a regular basis with a number of local business leaders. I attend 2 business association meetings a month. And I'm saying these things to give you some context about the fact that you can be a neighborhood activist and not necessarily one of those wacky people that's always trying to get in the way and stop things. I'm not speaking officially on behalf of any organization this morning, but I just wanted to give you that context. I strongly believe that partnerships between neighbors and businesses are a vital force in keeping our cities livable, and I've seen many examples of wonderful partnerships, trying to emphasize that things can work, and they do work in Portland many times. I'd like to be able to ask you to retain the 15-day extension in the notification period that was sort of part of the original bill. That actually came out of a meeting that our coalition pulled together with OLCC representatives and state legislators and about 7 or 8 of our neighborhood associations that had concerns about liquor licensing. And it's that notification that was the original bill is what we use to be able to do those front-end good neighbor agreements. The more time we have to notify, the more representative a group we can get to the table, and the more thorough and well-crafted a good neighbor agreement ends up being. So I know it's probably not possible to roll it back, but that was a provision that we were very much in favor of. However, if that's not possible, then the bill as it's amended is not a good bill and needs to be stopped. It really undermines the very fair and reasonable approach, the time, place, and manner ordinance that folks have just described for you that's currently in place in Portland. And I'm sure that none of you on the committee likes being routinely awakened from a sound sleep at 2:30 a.m. And what the current version of this bill says to such people is just, you know, go back to sleep. There's really nothing you can do about it. You've got to be there in the moment to catch, you know, make that phone call, catch the person. You know, you might as well just give it up. And for those people who look out their front windows, and I'm not going to be polite, and see someone urinating on their front lawns or driving motor vehicles up on the sidewalk, it says, you know, just don't worry about it. Whether you're staying in the Hilton or the Benson downtown, or you're one of my neighbors, a third grade teacher, who had months of daily interrupted sleep because of a local bar over a block away, you should be able to get a good night's sleep. And again, I'm not referring to the occasional interruption, the summer nights, we all get excited, we all, you know, yell to somebody saying goodbye. You know, that kind of stuff happens. But it's the sort of night after night, month after month that needs to be addressed. People often say it's one thing when people move in next to bars, they should expect noise. But in more and more neighborhoods in Portland, the bars are moving into next to the people. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but there needs to be some compromise and some give and take. And then there are the establishments that change owners. One bar in my neighborhood has changed owners 4 times in the past 6 years, and suddenly a great neighbor becomes the neighbor from hell, and there's no recourse from the state if that bad behavior doesn't fall within the purview of OLCC or there isn't sufficient staff resource to address it. So the current law, that, as we've discussed, that includes things that originate on the premises and follows them as they spill out into the surrounding neighborhood is important to maintain. And this creates a level playing field by providing a reasonable standard for ensuring that businesses will do their best to be responsible for the problems that emanate from their premises. And the proposed change really tilts the playing field against the community or the neighborhoods or those folks that are living near the businesses. I'd like to focus the rest of my time just, again, restating the things I think that you're hearing about why the current time, place, and manner system is really good for the community. And by community, I mean businesses as well as neighbors. I think that's an artificial dichotomy that, again, our coalition tries to eliminate. The time, place, and manner is a reasonable approach. It builds increased fairness in the system. It provides clear standards and expectations for both neighbors and businesses. It makes both business owners and community members accountable and responsible. The, as we've said, the incidents have to be carefully documented so there aren't frivolous complaints, and city staff does a good job of doing that. We're very careful. We're very aware of the idea of multiple bars, and more we have these situations where you have multiple bars within a given close proximity, if you will, and trying to be sure that, you know, we're only assigning responsibility to the appropriate party. This creates a system where businesses can work constructively with local citizens and the city staff to craft workable solutions. And the city staff, they're not the police here. They act as consultants, in a sense, to the businesses, trying to help them come up with, you know, good strategies. We have one bar in our neighborhood that is, you know, was opened by four young people who'd been in the service industry themselves. They have had some difficulty in monitoring their patrons, and it's the kind of resource that the city provides, in essence, with suggestions and strategies for making things work better.
I want to ask you a question there, because I'm sympathetic to the issue that you're raising. What I'm struggling with on this is, if I'm a proprietor, I don't have the ability to control who comes in my establishment. If I do, then I've got another issue that I'll be dealing with the government on. And help walk me through some of the steps of how do I control now the activity of these people. I can't control who comes in. How do I control their activity when they leave? Tell me how these good neighbor policies work.
You can, for example, folks alluded to a soft close, where, you know, you kind of get your heads up early morning and people kind of finish their last drink and kind of leave slowly in smaller groups, as opposed to closing the doors, kind of cutting things off all at once, and everybody leaves in, you know, one large group. In some cases, it might mean adding additional security. It might mean a group of bar owners in a given area having a little bit more security or pooling staff at the time that things are closing to kind of be there around the premises saying, okay, guys, keep it down, remember. Having signs posted, just trying to create norms and an environment that, you know, send the message that, you know, we're neighbors, we're part of a community here, and we want this to be a vibrant place, but we also want it to be a place where people can work and, you know, sleep.
Let me follow up on that question. We're talking about establishments within neighborhoods. Isn't it the neighbors that are in the establishment?
I laugh because we testified recently before the Planning Commission. One of my neighbors said, our neighborhood happens to be undergoing some change, gentrifying, changing right now. And so we've been handling a good neighbor agreement or two sometimes a month with new bars coming in. And, you know, this person said, gee, we're, you know, trying to expand our commercial district here, but we can't possibly consume all the alcohol that's being sold in this vicinity. So, you know, in many cases, you're usually when it is an establishment that only serves the neighborhood, there aren't as many problems because people do know their clients. If the people live there, they're aware of their neighbors. It's usually when you're drawing from a larger area that it's tougher to get a sense of, you know, who's there and what's going on. And in Portland, a lot of places draw from, you know, much larger area, but they're situated within neighborhoods. And one of the things that we strive for in Portland is, you know, good mixed use where you've got a commercial area and then you've got residences, you know, and behind and before so that you can walk and bike and, you know, get to that neighborhood, go to those restaurants, buy from those local business people. And that's the kind of fabric that we're trying very hard to create in our neighborhoods. And this just kind of rips it, you know, when you've got the sense of these people are coming from someplace else and, you know, they're not really caring about who's there and the fact that these other people have kids and lives and, you know, need to get some sleep.
I mean, you're hitting on an interesting notion about what's the duty of a business owner relative to the duty of residents, and I want to get a sense of where you think it is. The say that this is the bar, and this is the premise, the licensed premise, and then around it you've got the parking lot, streets. These are residents, and these are businesses. Where from your perception, where should the duty to prevent a nuisance begin and end with this bar? Here, or is it broader to include all? What's their responsibility?
It has to be somewhat broader, you know, because those folks are going out, and so there's got to be a message as those folks are going out that, you know, you're going into a sleeping neighborhood now if you're closing at 2:30.
I want to draw a line.
Yeah.
So would it extend in your mind if there's a pattern, not just one incident of a fight spilling over, but if there's a pattern?
Yes.
In your mind, would that extend even so far as across the street to the residents and businesses?
Yes, it would. The third grade teacher.
You draw a line like this.
Yes. The third grade teacher I mentioned lives a block away from the particular bar in question and was being awakened each evening exactly at closing time. So it's a question of turning down the volume, if you will, so that people can depart and not affect those around them.
What if hypothetically, may I, Mr. Chair?
Of course.
Yeah, what if hypothetically you're 5 miles away and there's a pattern of, I know this is just hypothetical,
yeah,
unlikely, but there's a pattern of people from this bar going to this neighborhood, bar hopping or something, that's 5 miles away, and you can show that the nuisance started here, but it's going 5 miles away. Does the duty go all the way out here, too?
How could you ever show that?
What if these two bar owners know each other, and they have customers that often go from one to the other, and hypothetically the city shows that people go here because they work here, they go here first, then often hop over to here. By the time they get over here, they're doing bad stuff that affects the residents and businesses here. If hypothetically that were shown, do you think the duty, the responsibility of this business owner, even goes so far as the nuisance over here?
You know, in an ideal world, it would. In an ideal world, we're all kind of trying to live and work and get along together. But it's not something
what I'm getting at is,
yes,
that you're saying the standard applies to the nuisance. The standard does not apply to the physical location. Is that a fair statement?
I guess that's a fair statement. But the thing that we're trying to work with is, you know, again, situations that can be clearly documented and the responsibility and accountability can be clearly assigned.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to again work with people to come up with reasonable solutions, sometimes very creative solutions, that address issues and don't unduly punish the proprietor, the owner. And, you know, we all know that there are, in some cases, a difficult neighbor who lives nearby and is, you know, kind of continually concerned because there's not much else going on in that person's life, and, you know, that's where they put their energy. You know, that's a reality. And in the neighborhood business, if you will, we spend a lot of time negotiating with those kinds of neighbors on a lot of different issues, not having anything to do with bars. So we know that's a reality. And this system is set up to be much more careful than that in terms of the kinds of complaints and the way they're managed. And I think it's demonstrated, you know, by the statistics that Eric presented and the feedback from the Oversight Committee, which is carefully constructed to include strong voices from the business community, that it's been doing a good job. Again, the goal is not to go after people and punish people, but to find ways to solve problems so people can go on having thriving businesses. And the neighborhood stays vibrant, and, you know, the city as a whole is better off.
Thank you for shouldering some tough questions there.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Any questions?
Yeah, I have one.
You have to introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Elizabeth Sober. And when you said they moved to the other bar, and they're in this other bar, right, and they're doing these bad things, that bar wouldn't take the responsibility of their conduct being at that bar, or what? And also earlier, somebody said things are happening, like, right outside the bar, drugs, stuff like that. But in the bill, they want the permit to go for the entire establishment. If they can't control what goes outside their bar, how they can control what goes on in the entire establishment? Would that make the spill out bigger? Or, I mean, how would it be controlled?
I think those will be some very good questions for the Restaurant Association when they come up. Keep your laptop, guys.
Excellent question. Please be prepared to address that when Mr. Perry comes up. Okay.
The answer to your question, those are excellent questions, is when you hear both sides come up and testify, do you get an answer? to where those limits lie. And as people testify, if you're not getting the answers, then you ask them the question.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing that we're asking in terms of keeping the time, place, and manner, the ability to have such a system in place in Portland, is that it brings people to the table to start to address the issues. And as Eric said, it's been very, we've only had one instance where you're coming to the point of actually trying to restrict or to change hours in some way. The rest of the time, it's getting people to the table to talk in reasonable ways about good neighbor agreements. It's, again, just the opportunity to have the conversation and to put the best minds together to solve the problems. It's not to, you know, the goal is not to punish people. The goal is to, you know, make a situation that works for everybody.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Yeah. Okay, Susan Pierce. Going up. Welcome. Hearing us this morning. You bet. If you could just introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Susan Pierce, and I hope you have the right spelling that you can read there. And I am, you need the whole address?
Yep, we're good.
I live in a Southeast Portland neighborhood. I want to kind of pick up where Linda left off. And actually, what I'd like to do before I forget them is respond to some of the questions that I've been hearing. First, let me mention that I'm a member of the neighborhood organization for my neighborhood. I am, have been for many years, a member of and sometimes the Good Neighbor Agreement Committee and Liquor License Response Committee. I'm also a member of the Noise Review Board for the City of Portland, and also as a part of my neighborhood organization, I work with some of the business associations in my neighborhood. I don't speak for any of those organizations, but I just want you to be aware of that background. Also, as it happens, I am a former emergency department nurse. I'm now a hospice nurse. But I want to support what Randy Leonard said about the effect of alcohol as a factor in a number of the things that we see in emergency departments. And also, I'm very familiar with the effects of sleep deprivation and what happens with people who are waking night after night after night and unable to get back to sleep. In terms of this setting that Representative Avakian drew here, and I think it relates back to the question that he asked Randy about, Commissioner Leonard about where is the nuisance? I would say that the impact of the nuisance extends far beyond the source of the nuisance. The source of the nuisance may be the bar or the convenience store, but the impact would extend certainly within that larger square. I've been living in Portland for many, many years, but I grew up in a logging town in Idaho, a small town in Idaho, where there's a bar about every third business on the street, and then another bar out in the country. And whereas in Portland, it might be difficult to relate the behaviors of someone 5 miles away from a bar in a place where the next bar may be 5 miles away, it's much easier, or the next, or the residence, or the drinker's home, or the little neighborhood where he lives, it's much easier to relate back. And yes, it could be that the impact of the nuisance could be that far away. Bar owners are held, and people who sell alcohol, people who serve alcohol in any way, are held responsible for over-serving that results in automobile accidents and injury and sometimes death. And I think they are in that way held responsible for the effect of their service. And I think that these are other ways that service can affect the residents of our cities and our towns. My neighborhood is made up of, it's a middle class neighborhood made up of people who are members of the helping professions, such as nurses and social workers, city employees. There are many young families, with small children and school children, and there are many seniors who've been living in the neighborhood for more than 50 years. My next-door neighbor, until she died, had been living there was 105 when she died, and had been living there for many years. It's a neighborhood with older homes and new homes as infill occurs. These older homes often are multi-story homes without air conditioning, and windows are opened for ventilation in the summer evenings. Also in my neighborhood are nodes of businesses within one 12-block area in my neighborhood that is between two streets. I've actually drawn a map, but I'm not much of an artist. So I'd be happy to share it with you, but I
can... In good company, then.
There are at least 7 bars or pubs. This is in one 12-block area. At least 5 cafes or restaurants that serve alcohol. That is, primarily they serve food, but they serve wine and beer and sometimes hard liquor with their food. There are 2 convenience stores, the small stores that often a large part of their sales are beers and wines, and one large multi-purpose grocery store, which of course also serves alcohol. All of these things have alcohol licenses. We're impacted from patrons who drink at the bars and pubs, less often probably from people who eat at the restaurants and cafes and have a glass of wine along with a big dinner. We're also impacted by street drinkers who may have no home other than a bridge or a tree somewhere under a tree. What I hear from neighbors as I'm doing good neighbor agreements with the establishments have been multiple complaints of noise spilling out during hours of operations, either loud voices or loud music, even with doors closed, even during the winter with the doors closed. The door opens to let the patron in and out, and the noise spills out, the door closes, and it's not quite as loud. Multiple complaints about exit noise, the loud voices. The longer some places open, the longer people drink, the more their inhibitions and their awareness of the sounds of their voices are suppressed by the effects of alcohol. So exit noise includes cheerful sometimes and sometimes less cheerful goodbyes. It may include fights. It includes slamming of car doors, revving of motors. I hear multiple complaints of unruly behavior, including littering, toileting, fighting. Sometimes behavior is at least perceived by residents as threatening. Many complaints of cars, patrons of the bars blocking driveways, many complaints of erratic driving as people drive away. One of my neighbors has twice in recent months experienced destruction of her street trees and her landscaping, I think both in midday. Linda may correct me on this.
1 at 5 in the afternoon, 1 at 2:30 a.m.
One at 5 in the afternoon, where as a result of the driving from as someone was leaving the bar that's near her home. And I've already mentioned that some of these antisocial behaviors come from people who are housed as well as the apparently unhoused. We don't have any other business in the neighborhood that stays open as late as 2:30 in the morning, so there isn't another source for... And my neighbors who are school teachers and nurses and city employees are not partying late at night on a Thursday night. They have to get up in the morning and go to work. So we know those are coming from the bars. as Portland focuses on increasing density, which we are trying to do for many good reasons, partly to keep from sprawling all over the rest of the state, we're going to find more and more situations where people are living close to bars and other businesses. And this isn't a bad thing. This is a good thing. But we have to learn to be good neighbors with one another. Most of these businesses are good neighbors. It's good business to be a good neighbor, and they recognize that. Many of them are responsive to gentle prodding from that the time, place, and manner allows us to do and respond quickly. There are a few bad apples who need a little more pressure, which the time, place, and manner allows us to do. I wanted to mention some notes. One of the other questions that was asked, there are a number of ways that a business can control the behavior of their patrons within their establishment and outside their establishment. And those include, as I think Linda mentioned, the soft closing, an early closing when they stop serving liquor earlier than when they're going to be closing. So people finish up their drinks, and there's a space before they're leaving. Places that include music that is loud in the middle of the evening and that is encouraging joyful behavior can turn that music down so that the voices are, instead of leaving an establishment with the voices that they've been using to overcome the loud music, they're talking in a softer voice. Atmosphere, just the type of setting affects the behaviors. And often we have people who are walking people to their cars to help remind them to be quiet as they leave. So there are ways that people can do this. Any questions?
I got one. I'm Nicole Froderman, and I was, why don't they just hire extra policemen to work on the graveyard shift and just patrol the certain areas at the bars?
That has to do with financing on the city of Portland. The policemen are paid out of public funds and out of our taxes, that come from our taxes. I think that the bar has some responsibility for being a good neighbor without having to depend on being policed by the city of Portland, or in our case, the city of Portland, whatever the local jurisdiction.
Very good question.
That was a good question.
Of course.
I'm Shaylee Foss, and I was just wondering, so the bar is in charge of everybody that is in the bar and in the vicinity of the bar, but once they step off, they don't have, like, so basically you're asking them to, babysit them until they get to another bar, because that is that's the police's job. That's not, the bar owner can't follow them around and...
No. We're not asking to babysit until they go to the next bar, but we are asking them to create an atmosphere within the bar, close at an early enough hour, or perhaps escort patrons to cars, especially in the wee hours of the morning. An escort to a car isn't as necessary at 10 o'clock at night as it is in the wee hours of the morning. So at least they are... not impacting the neighborhood as they are leaving their bar.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is one last question. So would you support it if somebody suggested to have police actually come out and patrol and just make sure that any conduct that wasn't acceptable didn't break out after bars closed?
I would not oppose that. However, there may be other things that the police need, places where police are needed. I think that to move all of the responsibility, I would be opposed to moving all the responsibility from the policeman I mean, I'm sorry, removing all the responsibility from the bar owner and putting it on the shoulders of the policeman. They can't be everywhere.
I understand.
The bar or the grocery store owner has responsibility for...
I understand that they would have responsibility at their establishment, but they don't have that right now. And if that was the only thing that you could do, and just to have like that extra there, and then you wouldn't have to have reports happen. It would be right there. They'd be catching them doing it.
I don't think the city of Portland, and again, I'm speaking just for the city of Portland, I can't remember how many bars and restaurants were...
2,000
in the city. I don't think we have 2,000 policemen in order to post one outside of every bar. Let alone take care of everything else that's going on in the city of Portland.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
So
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, let's see here. Why don't we call Mr. Bill Perry on up? He's got his left hook ready.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, right. Mr. Linden comes up with me.
Perfect. I was going to do individually, but that works very well.
Okay, for the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association. I think we're focusing on one aspect of this bill. I do want to touch on a couple of different aspects because I do think they all, from my opinion, work together. First of all, this is a $400 new fee for new licensees, and that is kind of important because as of right now, with neighborhood and comments and good neighbor agreements that we've talked about in the past, these are all a very important aspect for a bar opening. And so what has happened is because all this comment happens, a bar will plan to open up on January 1st but can't get their liquor license for 3 to 4 months. And why that establishment is sitting there going through this scrutiny, they're losing money. So one of the things the original aspects of this bill did is it allows you to pay $400 if you're new to the system and get a temporary license. So while all this comment period and conduct is going on, you can basically be there to try to operate money or not losing money.
Yeah, really quick, Bill, but a restaurant would have the option of not getting that temporary permit and just going through the process.
No, under this, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, under this, basically if you're already in the system, like say 7-Eleven or TGI Fridays, they wanted to open up another establishment, they wouldn't have to pay it. So it's not all new establishments. What it deals with is people that are new to the system, because there's an added investigations from both the city and the state from that standpoint. And so it just deals with those new people to the system, not necessarily new establishments. In that, what we've also done is the neighborhood associations has asked for more time. Right now they only have 45 days to comment on a new license. They've extended that to 90 days because neighborhood associations sometimes only meet once a month. City councils sometimes only meet once, a week, depending on how big or small the city. So a lot of times, because of time constraints, local neighborhood associations were not able to sit down with the bar owner and then get their comments to the city without the 45 days being done. So the neighborhood associations asked for an extended time period to try to comment more up front. So, I mean, there is something positive in here for neighborhood associations. Now, as we deal with the time, place, and manner, I think there's been a lot of good comment around this, and actually Randy Leonard spoke several times for me, and I guess I have to correct some of the things that were said. First of all, I think in answer to your question, as it relates to liquor licenses, it is illegal, or I shouldn't say illegal, if I violate a local ordinance, whether it's a nuisance ordinance, which the city of Portland has, or a noise ordinance, which the city of Portland has, if there is a violation, then they turn that over to the OLCC, and the OLCC can take some punitive action against my license. But it is very important, as we look at the way alcohol is set up in the state of Oregon, basically, cities have the ability to judge what kind of businesses they want. The nuisance ordinances in the city of Portland can close any business for nuisances that are convicted under their ordinance. They've got a whole thing. They can fine them. They can do different things. So right now, there are nuisance ordinances that deal with all businesses equally. On the flip side, since alcohol service is just an aspect of a business that's restricted to certain types of businesses, the actual service of alcohol is left up to the city or the OLCC. They judge who gets a license, what the restrictions are on the license, when they can serve, when they can open, when they can close. So just the actual specific aspect of that business is regulated by the OLCC. It's the way the statutes are set up today. So when there are issues that they came up around noise, if a bar violates City of Portland's noise ordinance, and the City of Portland takes some punitive action, they can give that to OLCC, and then OLCC can penalize the license. What is happening now is some of these noise ordinances aren't breaking, or noise complaints are not breaking whatever that ordinance is. There could be decibels. There are different ways that they judge it. But they have to go to a court system and say, did somebody talking outside a bar violate a noise ordinance? And a lot of times it's not loud enough to violate whatever the decimal standard is. And I will say, to be perfectly honest, a lot of times the city attorney or the district attorney decides not to prosecute them because they think they've got better things to do. So there's different things that play into this. But if they violate a noise ordinance under today, before this bill's passed or after it's passed, they can still be held against the licensee. Fights, I think Representative Avakian's point, I shouldn't say point, where I think his point was accurate, and I think Commissioner Leonard's perception of our opinion is different. If two people are fighting in a bar, and we kick them out in the street, and they continue to fight, I don't think this ordinance, whether I like that or not, I don't think this ordinance stops it. I mean, it really is a nexus, much like liquor license. If I serve somebody that's visibly intoxicated and they leave my establishment, I do carry some liability. If things originate in my establishment and spill out into the street, I don't think there's anything in this language that prevents that from being used potentially against my licensee. The issues, and this is not just with bars, the issues that arise in some of these subcommittees are street drinking, meaning somebody buys beer in a grocery store, they go down to the local park or under a bridge and they start drinking. I do not think personally that is the responsibility of the licensee, as long as when they came in they were not violating any laws what they do afterwards. The other thing that's been brought up several times is public urination. Just because somebody leaves my establishment, I don't think I have some ability to know whether or not they're going to publicly urinate at some point. I'm not condoning those activities, but our point is we really don't have an ability to know when they leave whether or not they're going to violate a crime.
Representative Avakian.
What if you've been running that establishment for a year and every other night the neighbors come by and say, when people leave your bar, they urinate in my yard, and so you know that activity is occurring, and you know it's occurring every other night. Then what's the duty of the business owner?
Chair Smith, Representative Avakian, and I don't know if I necessarily have an answer for that, because from my perspective, I'm not going to sit here and say it's a bar owner's responsibility, because the act of public urination is illegal. If it happens in a consistent location, I think it is something the police could handle. If it's something just as a specific instance, I don't think either the police nor I have an ability to do it. But I will say that the good neighbor agreements, as they come in, and I do want to note it for the record, these things have been happening for long periods of time. They talk about soft closing, added patrols in bars. Generally, these instances have been able to been fixed through good neighbor agreements. And so, it depends on where that public urination happens. If it's across the street or something, or within a close vicinity, I think that it's probably realistic. But, you also run into the same problem of safety for my employees. If they're within a close proximity, it's easier for me to probably handle it. If they have to go 4 to 5 blocks away, it's posting somebody at that time period. So, I mean, I don't know if I have an answer, and I don't know if this solves that problem. I do think that a repeated offense probably is going to lie on some others.
Well, what I'm trying to get at, going even just outside the express language of yeah. what we're doing here, is where the duty lies, and I'd like your opinion on that. Because we're only talking about patterns of conduct. We're yeah. not talking about the one incident that spills out. But with an establishment that has a shown pattern of conduct, urinating in the, across the yard or people selling drugs in the park, whatever it is, okay. if that pattern is established, where do you draw the line as to where the duty of the business owner lies? It looks to me like the proposed language would end the duty right here. Do you agree? Or do you think that the duty is somewhere else?
Well, and I guess, Representative Vaughan, Chair Smith, I do think, now, remember the language only deals with operation of selling alcohol. It does not deal with nuisance aspects of a business that can be addressed under the nuisance ordinance. It just says that if there's nuisances that occur outside my establishment, you cannot regulate the sale of alcohol. It doesn't mean you can't deal with my business under your normal nuisance ordinance. See, I mean, there is a distinction there that I think the city of Portland is now making a leap. Right now they have a nuisance ordinance that treats every business in that neighborhood, whether they sell alcohol or not, equally. Everybody's treated equally. What this ordinance does that they've passed is says specifically if there's problems in that neighborhood that happen outside your establishment, I can restrict your hours of operation, which traditionally in the past have always been handled with OLCC. You can punish me a business on an equal basis for nuisances, but I get treated just like every other business on the block. As far as the sale of alcohol, that restriction traditionally has only been basically rested in the OLCC. See, I mean, I'm not talking about nuisances and how they deal with nuisances. I should be treated just like every other block. And if I violate a nuisance ordinance, whether it's drugs, anything else, if I violate that and they can prove that, I get treated just like every other business on that block. All of this ordinance that they passed deals with the selling of alcohol.
Well, the only thing that I... I don't think you are like every other business on the block. Not every other business sells alcohol, and alcohol does have certain ramifications to its use that selling a pair of shoes doesn't.
And I have restrictions from OLCC based on it. And then I do, the drug issue did come up. OLCC basically has administrative rules around sales of drug around my property. They do have those regulations. They say that if there's a drug sale in the parking lot and it happens more than once, then all of a sudden it can be used against my licensee. I mean, I have certain restrictions placed on me by the OLCC.
I want to share with our guests, we're kind of getting a little bit outside the scope of what our committee normally does. This is a budget committee, and traditionally what we do is look at the fiscal impacts of legislation, and we have policy committees who take a look at the policy discussion. We're getting outside of that a little bit, and so I just want to share that with you from an educational perspective.
I've got one more on this point, and then I'll be done.
You bet.
I just want to go to the information that you gave us, because at least with regard to this section, I think it looks to me you're relying heavily on the judge's decision that used the word apt. But what I want, do you have a copy of the ordinance in front of you?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
What I'm trying to figure out, and I'm guessing you've got a good explanation for it, is that the judge says if you read back to section 14B.120.030, which is the one that's highlighted, that's underlined there,
mm-hmm.
it requires that those activities occur at the establishment and that they be related to arising out of an establishment. When I look at the ordinance, I don't see where the ordinance requires that those activities occur at the establishment, as the judge said. So, but since you're relying on that section, which you highlighted for us, just explain to me where the judge is getting this definition that under that section it requires that the activities occur at the establishment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vaughan, if I could take a shot at that. For your record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Restaurant Association and 7-Eleven. What the judge essentially ruled was that, and what the language of 2056 is narrowly tailored to reflect, is that the nuisance must occur, the activities must occur on the licensed premises. Now, he did not invalidate the TPM ordinance. He simply went back to the underlying statute on which it was based and found that it was overly broad in the sense of trying to regulate conduct that didn't occur on the licensed premise. So when the ordinance states any combination of three or more nuisance activities that is related to or arising out of an establishment, my view of it is the judge read that language as overly broad in terms of what conduct can be regulated under this ordinance, and that you really have to limit it, in his opinion, to the nuisances and or activities occurring on the licensed premise. And that's why we tried to tailor the language of 2056.
I don't see that in the ordinance.
You don't see...
The judge says that this section, the one I gave to you, requires that the activities occur at the establishment. I don't see that in the ordinance. I think the judge made a mistake.
Well, in the ordinance itself, it says nuisance activities that are related to or arising out of an establishment. That's much broader than nuisance activities that occur on the licensed premise. And that overbreath is what, essentially was challenged in the litigation.
And can I add something to it? Mr. Chairman, Representative Avakian, I too, and I mean, when you look at the core, when you actually go back and look at the legislative history on what the time, place, and manner was done with, it was dealing with troubled establishments that actually had drugs and prostitution happening inside their walls, and I think a lot of what the judge was driving at was, what we were dealing with were nuisances that were happening on, and it was giving the cities some ability to try to regulate the licensees if there are other violations outside of liquor service that are happening inside the establishment. And that's why, like I said, when they brought up riots and all these other things, I don't think there's any problems dealing with any of those issues. The problems that come up in the committees and everything else are public urination, street drinking, and a lot of those really are difficult for us to control. And those were some of the, I guess, topics that were brought up in the course of the case. And I think he was dealing with kind of, what we're talking about are things that really happen out there. And I think some of the examples were getting rather broad, and he was trying to scope the argument, per se.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I could just add one thing. It was real clear in all of the deliberations over the time, place, and manner ordinance that what we were really dealing with were problems of street drinking, homelessness, and unacceptable behavior in public places. And those are all real live problems that affect the quality of neighborhood life. And we wouldn't for a moment suggest that wasn't the case. But what the response the Portland City Commission had was to try and throw a great big net over all liquor licensees and attempt to make them responsible for activities that they actually didn't have any control over whatsoever. So if our 7-Eleven store sells a six-pack of beer to an individual who does not appear visibly intoxicated, and that person walks down the street six blocks to the park and consumes that alcohol and makes a nuisance of him or herself, that's what this ordinance is intended to hold our licensee responsible for. And it's not realistic. And it also doesn't address what are really the underlying issues that are creating these problems of the street drinking, alcoholism, homelessness, those are, I don't want to minimize those as real problems, but this is you've got to understand there are certain things that licensees have control over and there are certain things they don't.
I'm sorry. Give me one.
One last one there.
What? And maybe it's more a statement than a question. But the example you just gave, I agree completely with. Guy comes in, he buys beer, he goes in, he causes a problem in the park. You know, that's his responsibility, not the business owner. But when the local government can show that there's a pattern of a certain occurrence happening, such as it's happened 20 times that people have come in, bought the beer, gone to the park, then you have a situation where I think the business owner has a responsibility to the community around their business. And if they're conducting a lawful business that provides a good income for them and their employees, but that adversely impacts folks around them, then it's the business owner's duty to either stop it or leave. Because there's an obligation that extends beyond your own self-interest. Just for the same reason we don't put aluminum smelters in the middle of neighborhoods, because it affects what's going on around you. So we're not dealing with the one situation that occurred. We're dealing with patterns of conduct.
Seeing that really quick, that was an issue I was struggling with when I went and pulled the statutory language on this. And I by no means am an attorney, but you know, there's remedies available for nuisance, and there's procedures for abating a nuisance. And when you read through those, there's very clear language already in statute available to deal with these situations. And for me, that helped clear up a cloudy situation. So when those situations do occur, you know, it's very clear any person whose property or personal enjoyment thereof is affected by a private nuisance may maintain an action for damage thereof. If damage is given for the plaintiff in the action, the plaintiff may, on motion in addition to the execution to enforce the judgment, obtain an order allowing a warrant of issue to the sheriff to abate the nuisance. It goes on to say, if the order to abate provided for in the above is made, the clerk shall, when requested, issue a warrant directed to the sheriff requiring the sheriff forthwith to abate the nuisance at the expense of the defendant to return, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's statutory language in place already to protect landowners.
And Representative Vakian, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Perry, to this point, I haven't heard anybody, and this was the point we made to the City Council, where this problem has happened. Because I do want it noted for the record, the problem establishment that Commissioner Leonard talked about, which was fuel, I believe, there were two of them, fuel and level, they've both closed. Nothing to do with this ordinance. There are laws in place. The Gypsy was a problem establishment on 21st. They entered a good neighbor agreement far before this happened, and they closed at 11:30. So, I mean, yeah, there are these examples people keep throwing out. But as of right now, the current system of either a local nuisance ordinance or the restrictions or good neighbor agreements on the licensees, they haven't had any examples that I've found of that haven't been able to been solved. I will say, you know, there are still complaints about noise, and I think those are probably not going to stop. But you have housing built in industrial neighborhoods in downtown Portland, and so there are always going to be these mixed-use zones where there's complaints that we're probably not going to be able to solve because nobody's violating the law. They're annoying, everything else, but nobody is violating the law. But when you look at the examples, both given by Commissioner Leonard and the good neighbor agreements that are out there, nobody has given us a reason yet why this is necessary, because the violations have been handled through current avenues.
If what you're saying is so, why are we changing the law?
Because
what's the reason for the amendment?
For my Representative Avakian, this is Bill Perry again, because when we see what is happening in the committee at this point, it's dealing with street drinking and public urination that when people left establishments, I had no idea that they were having these problems. And so I see a potential for lawsuit. And I, you know, it's just one of those things that's going to be expensive for my members to defend. That's why I feel we need it.
Do you want to provide some more testimony? Or?
Just one quick point. I think it is important to remember that OLCC has an awful lot of enforcement authority and sanction authority right now over licensees that create problems. And that's something to keep in context, because I think the TPM ordinance in Portland, frankly, did intrude on what has traditionally been OLCC authority over setting restrictions, for example, on hours of operation, types of products you can sell or not sell. And we have a clear state statutory scheme in which the authority over the sale and regulation of alcoholic beverages in the state is very clearly vested in the Liquor Commission. And that was another concern we had with how far this ordinance went. And Mr. Perry alluded to it. I mean, I've watched for years issues arise in the city of Portland between off-premise and on-premise establishments and neighborhood groups. And almost invariably, the most successful solutions came out of voluntary agreements where the parties got around the table and you had the licensee, you had the neighborhood group, you had the, in many cases, the police bureau participating. And they came up with agreements as to how they were going to do things. And that type of collaborative process is always going to yield better results than the heavy hammer. And that's one of the problems with this ordinance.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Let's see here. I'm going to go to John Stubenall, and then I'm going to wrap it up with Paul Romaine. We have the honor of having Representative Richardson in the audience with us. Representative, did you want to testify?
No,
well, you're welcome to obviously come up here. Okay. He's a man of the people. That's right. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. John Stubenval, Communications Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. In its original form, this legislation was pre-session filed on behalf of the OLCC to address three liquor licensing related issues: multi-year licensing, initial filing fee, and expansion of what we call the temporary letter of authority. The first point is multi-year licensing. This really is a streamlining idea. Currently there are more than 10,000 liquor licenses in the state, each of which must be renewed on an annual basis. So that means that OLCC and the liquor license holders out there have to push that paper each year. What the first piece of the concept would do is to say that liquor licenses can be renewed every 2 years rather than every 1 year. So a good streamlining piece. The second part of the legislation is the $400 initial filing fee that's been previously discussed. This would apply only to, as it's been said, those new to the system, those who would require an initial liquor license investigation. So we feel this is a good way to recoup a piece of the cost of that initial liquor license application process. And then finally, the temporary letter of authority expansion. Under current statute, only certain liquor licensed businesses are eligible for this what's called temporary letter of authority. A temporary letter of authority allows certain businesses to operate with liquor license privileges while their liquor license is being processed by the OLCC. What this legislation would do is to say that this temporary letter of authority is available to any business applying for a liquor license. So it would in fact level the playing field and allow all types of liquor licenses to be eligible for this temporary letter of authority. I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Romaine, you're up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. I wanted to give you a little bit of history. First of all, and when you get old, you can do that. The 471-164 actually came in 1989 when Vera Katz was Speaker of the House. She went on to be mayor of the city of Portland. And it dealt with the problem that of nuisance inside of establishments that served alcohol. And the new specific nuisances that were dealt with in that statute were prostitution, drugs, and gambling. what the bill that passed dealt with those particular aspects and was really to clarify that the city could regulate activity inside those establishments that dealt with those particular problems, because there was a question, because of the exclusive OLCC jurisdiction over alcohol, of whether or not the city ordinances actually could apply in those establishments. And that's what was clarified in what now is 471-164. If you know the workings of legislative council, they can basically pick apart the statute you pass and put one over in this chapter and the rest over in this other chapter, and that's what they did. So it doesn't look like it goes together, but that was the reason they put it that way. I, too, have been personally subject to all types of harassment at 2:30 in the morning regarding alcohol. In fact, we had to go to court to get an injunction against the folks who were harassing us. What it was a neighbor of a restaurant that I was involved with who would call my house at 2:30 in the morning to complain that people were talking loudly outside of my establishment. I was an investor there, a fairly public investor. But basically, we were getting phone calls at first it would just be hang-up calls, and then it was, you know, you're up, and I'm up, and you're going to be up. So I went to the OLCC, and I found that they had been running a file on this restaurant. And basically, there were like 140 complaints from a couple of neighbors there, and they were very onerous complaints. They were a man stood outside of a restaurant at 1 o'clock in the morning and spoke loudly on his cell phone. Car wheels squealed. Fan belt squealed. We were down at the particular restaurant, which happened to be in the Pearl, on a first Thursday. It was a September day, a few years back. Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous day. There must have been, you couldn't even walk in the Pearl. It was just an absolute zoo out there. And there were 5 complaints that night from the neighbors that the establishment was contributing to noise and stuff. And those were being used against the establishment to build a case to take away the liquor license. We came down here in 99, I came down here, took it as a personal crusade, and you passed, and the governor signed, a change in the noise ordinance, or noise statutes, that basically did what we want to do here, which is make sure there's a nexus to the establishment. That if the establishment is actually violating a noise ordinance, you can take away their license, but there has to be a nexus, going back to that particular establishment. That's all that you're doing in Section 5 is just ensuring that you have to go back to the particular establishment. Make that nexus. I know from personal experience in the business that it is near impossible to control folks who are wandering out. Now, the urination problem. If your bathroom doesn't work in that restaurant, and people have to go outside to urinate, you've got a big problem, because I don't care if they're going 2 blocks away or 3 blocks away, they're doing it because of a problem you created by not having a working restroom. But if you have signs up, and frankly, if there are people going out constantly, I would put up a few signs and try and monitor it a little bit. But if you're putting signs up or at least telling people you use the restrooms and make sure you use the restrooms and the restrooms work and are not, you know, places you wouldn't want to go into unless you were accompanied by somebody with a gun to defend you, you probably don't have a whole bunch of responsibility beyond that establishment. It's very difficult running an establishment to control activity once it gets out, as long as you're not violating any law inside the establishment. If you're not serving visibly intoxicated people, you don't know that they're going to wander out. If you're not serving underage people, you don't know that they're going to cause a problem outside, and it makes it very difficult. We highly support Section 5. I think the rest of the bill is absolutely great. I've been working in the alcohol industry for a long time. OLCC has been a pleasure to deal with. They need more assets to get the applications through, and so we highly support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It appears, Mayor.
Yes, Representative.
It appears in the example you gave about people going out and urinating that even if you put signs up, you tell people don't do it, your plumbing is fixed so they can use that. But if it's occurring, regardless of fault, of whose fault it is, if it's occurring and it's occurring repetitively, then the problem exists. The question for me would be, who carries the burden of that problem? the people in the surrounding area, or the people from the location from which that problem is coming. As an example, you've got the bar, you've got signs up, the plumbing works. People would not be coming to that neighborhood and therefore urinating in the yards if it weren't for the presence of that establishment. So who is it, regardless of fault, that carries the burden of the problem? The surrounding residents or the location?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, it's very, you know, we're going back to law school here, so it's an interesting debate. But I would actually throw the problem back at the city and say maybe you need to relook your zoning ordinances to see whether a particular kind of commercial establishment really fits in this particular kind of neighborhood.
And here you and I agree that this is a local issue and that it should be up to that local government. It's their responsibility in order to take care of that. But you're asking for the powers of the state to dictate
the result. Well,
Mr. Chair, and then we're going to wrap this up because I'm going to get to work session.
Okay. What we are saying is that with this particular thing the city is trying to do, time, place, and manner, regulate hours of alcohol sales, as long as I'm not violating the state laws on alcohol sales, then I think the city has a problem doing that. There may be some other aspects we talk about under nuisance where they can go after me, because frankly, if they're going into a bookstore, if everybody's coming into a bookstore and going out and not using that and going out to the neighbor and taking a leak, then we got a problem with the bookstore. But we can cover it under the general nuisance ordinances. And that's the same way we have to handle the alcohol establishments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else want to testify? Thank you. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2056. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2056. Colleagues, I want to share a personal perspective on this. I would make the assumption that the responsibility lies on the person who is urinating in the yard to use the restroom or to not consume excess beverages to where they feel compelled to urinate in someone's yard. And as you drew a picture, I want to just show a very quick picture because I have an experience. An AM PM, a McDonald's, and my grandmother's home, Grandma. Grant High School's right over here. Every night as a child growing up during the summer when I'd stay at grandmother's home, I would watch high school kids from Grant High School go hang out in the parking lot at McDonald's. They would also be consuming beer and California coolers that they would acquire from the AM/PM. They would then come over, throw garbage in the yard. They would do all sorts of things. I'm not sure I could place the responsibility on either McDonald's or AM/PM, but rather perhaps on the parents and on those kids for saying, why are you drinking beer in a McDonald's parking lot when McDonald's was doing everything they could to shoo them out? AM/PM was doing everything they could to not sell alcohol to the minor. At some point, I think the responsibility lies on the person, and I would contend there's statutory language in place for the 1%, if you will, who are causing a nuisance. I think it's incumbent upon the landowners, upon the businesses, to take action to ensure those situations don't occur. So that's where I am on this issue. I also think that House Bill 2056 is going to get careful scrutiny on the Senate side, and I'll be casting a yes vote on this.
Comments?
Well, thanks for the invitation, but I think I've spoken enough for the one day.
I will recognize, though, that I think some of... All right, so I will say something. Chair Smith, I do think you bring up a good point. You never take away the responsibility of the person who's committing the bad act. They are always responsible for their own behavior. The only question here, and it's a fair debate on both sides, and I think those who are representing the bars and restaurants did a very good job of explaining the reasons why those establishments need support as well. But it does eventually boil down to, regardless of whose fault it is, when you have an establishment
in which bad things are occurring in a neighborhood, who carries the burden of that harm? Is it the innocent people that are on the outskirts of it? Or does that presence of that establishment inherently give some burden to the owner of the establishment? And I would say, even though it's not fair completely, that it does. That's part of being a business owner. And the problem with this amendment in Section 5, is, as I read it, is it completely obliterates the duty of that establishment once you step outside the four walls. And that would be my reading of it. And so it's a great intent in order to find a better balance. It just goes too far. It's asking for too much. So I would look forward to a conference committee, if it happens to end up there, to just take another look at that and find a better balance.
Mr. Chairman, having not been really that much aware of this this particular issue as part of this bill until today, I want to share many of your sentiments and also Representative Bakken's in terms of the personal responsibility issue. There's no doubt in my mind that should always be foremost in everyone's approach to these issues, is that individuals have a responsibility to their own actions. Conversely, though, we as a society have also said that bar owners also have some responsibility, and I think those things are in law. You can't overserve people. You shouldn't do it. It's dumb. It opens up to all kinds of lawsuits as a bar owner, and it's just common sense. I think the industry stepped forward. They recognize that. I think they put those things in place. So I strongly agree that there are issues here that make sense to me. I have to say that I find some positives in Portland's approach to the issue. I mean, it seems to me that this communication issue of bringing together a local business that's going to sell alcohol and community neighbors and executing a good neighbor agreement, that there's a lot of positives to that, and I think that's a good direction. I guess the question that I've had in my mind that I think is, at least in part, has been answered today is has the city had authority, has OLCC had an authority to accomplish these issues without having the city of Portland have to produce a time and place ordinance that deals specifically with this one thing? And I see and understand both sides of that argument. Ultimately, I guess for me, this comes down to a decision that I believe that because of the issue of personal responsibility and because of the issue that how long do we hold people liable for things that occur on their premises, which is a whole broad another discussion. Because of that, I'm going to err on the side of saying that the bar owner can only be held responsible for so much that occurs once the people leave his establishment. And in that regard, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and vote for this bill as it is amended, and wait to see, I guess, what happens over on the Senate side to see if it comes back in a different form and if we have to have this discussion again further. But I have appreciated both of the thoughtful comments on both sides of this issue, and I do understand the rationales behind both of the comments, and I'm kind of going to go with my libertarian leanings here, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Libertarian.
That's correct.
Thank you. Okay, so we are going to need a motion.
I'm an odd beaver. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2056 as amended to the full budget committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Krupp moves House Bill 2056 as amended to the full budget committee with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Just one thing. This bill was much more than just Section 5, and I'm very supportive of the other sections of the bill. Because of the inclusion of Section 5, I'll be a no vote.
Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? Any dissension other than Representative Avakian's no vote? Seeing none,
So passed. Ladies, we truly appreciate you joining us on this issue. Traditionally, we focus on budget. Today, we got a little bit outside that purview, but...
We don't usually deal with policy-type things.
But that's okay. This was a good day for us.
These committees.
And we are going to adjourn.
Well, I think, too, if those four had been in charge, we'd have been done 45 minutes.
Okay.
That'd be a lesson to you, ladies.
I need this.